The recording that you're about to listen to is a talk from the City Bible Forum. We would appreciate you respecting our copyright by not making copies of this talk or altering the content in any way. We hope that you find the material beneficial. If you would like more information on the City Bible Forum, you can visit us on the web at citybibleforum.org.
Please welcome Dr. Greg Clark.
Thanks, Robert. And the surrounds are very delightful. People that make the difference, even though the food can be good at places like that. Thank you for coming and giving me your lunch hour. I appreciate that, and I know it's no small thing to give up a bit of time to listen to what I hope is a talk that will challenge you, a talk that might perhaps be strange or unusual to some of you, or if you have some long-held beliefs, might even be a bit offensive. Who knows? But I'm really pleased that we can do this sort of thing in Australia, stand up and talk about controversial topics like the apocalypse in a workplace, in a big city, and if people keep to Robert's rules, not fight each other at the end. And isn't that a wonderful thing? And some in this room know that you can't take that for granted. That's a wonderful part of our culture. So I'll start by offending you by saying that anyone who thinks they know the future is a little bit of an idiot. It's a foolish thing to suggest that you know what's happening next, isn't it? I mean, we call it crystal ball gazing for a reason, that we don't seem to have access to the future. We live in the present. We know the past a bit, but the future? How do you connect with what's happening next? And how would you ever know that the world was about to end? Or any big question like that about where we're headed? So it's a little foolish to deal with this topic, and I admit that up front. But it's also a little foolish not to be interested in the future. It's actually just as silly to just live in the present or to live in the past. In fact, any human being who isn't concerned about tomorrow or isn't planning or isn't looking forward or wondering what's next probably isn't playing their role as a human being very well. After all, the jobs you do, if you think about them, most of them probably depend a bit on you looking into the future. Who needs what tomorrow? What are the plans for my department? How will I meet that budget? They're all things about what's coming next. And frankly, when you sit down at your desk, you know that it's pretty hard to work it out. It's pretty hard to know what's coming next. You know you'll have lunch tomorrow, you're fairly certain. You know you'll need more staples in the stapler. There's some things that seem predictable. But these bigger questions about where we're headed, about the shape of the future, about what life will be like in the future, they're much harder questions for human beings to handle. We are a bit stuck in the present with a little bit of access to the past. So how do we deal with the future? Well, some people make business out of it. And you may have heard of one American futurist with the wonderful name Faith Popcorn. Anyone heard of this person? I don't know if this is her Christian name, but it seems to work well in her book titles, Faith Popcorn. Here's what she said about where the world was going in 2006. She's a futurist. On the cutting edge of the developed world, our material opulence has bred isolation and left us emotionally starving. We crave physical contact. I guess that might be true. I'd probably agree with that. The fad for cuddle parties is only the beginning. As our work hours mount, our friendships become virtual, we will seek simple physicality wherever we can find it. Doctors' offices and hospitals will begin keeping animals on hand to comfort recovering patients. Airports will discover that positive touches increase retail traffic and will hire actors to welcome you with a hug as you deplane. Mechanised hugging booths will take the place of payphones in many cities. Even the most reserved financial advisors will literally hold your hand through tough times. This is what she thought would happen in 2006. Now, we've been through the GFC since then. How much hugging did you get? I wonder how good her view was. There was that YouTube sensation, that guy who offered free hugs. Maybe he'd been reading her books. But yeah, this is an attempt to look at what we're going to need in the future. And in some areas, she's onto something. But she couldn't quite see where the future of phone booths was going. We haven't got hugging booths around Melbourne yet, unless I've missed them. Now, there's an attempt to look into the future with some wisdom from the past and the present, but a lot of crystal ball gazing added in there. How many of us knew that the GFC was around the corner? back in 2009. It stuns me that the whole world is working hard in financial services and markets and everything else, and yet this big surprise arrives. And you know, okay, there are a few people now who are writing books about how they knew it was happening. But you know, there's huge surprises, and yet we've tried so hard to work out the future. We really struggle with it. It's not a great human capacity to know what's going to happen next. So we look in various places. We look to the past. Can we analyse what's happened so far in order to project into what's going to happen next? That's probably the most used management technique for planning. You know, what happened? What's our historical data? Let's use that and see where we're headed. And sometimes we get that right. We also use the present. We say, okay, we understand ourselves better than anyone else. We're at the cutting edge of history today. What's happening today? What's the vibe of today? You know, can we analyse our own circumstances right now to know what's happening next? Because no one's closer to the future than us today. And we kind of analyse ourselves in the moment. Then we try to look for the permanent things, the ongoing things. What is it that has stayed the same all the way through? Because we can probably rely on that. What are our blue chip shares? Or can we rely on them anymore? What are the through lines? What are the ongoing elements? Maybe they can tell us what's going to happen next. And then some of us, the futurists, those working in IT, those working in philosophy maybe, the arts, they say, what's going to be new? Where's the innovation going to take place? What will be new tomorrow? And they try to jump into a new space, a new reality. Something like Facebook comes out of this imagining of the future. You know, okay, I'd like to connect with my friends. What would happen in the future to make that possible? And the innovators try to get us into that future space. So you've got these four areas, the past, the present, the ongoing, and the innovative, that we want to look at in order to get information about the future. We'll come back to those four. Keep them in your mind. The topic I was particularly asked to talk about today is not the whole future, but the future of the world. And in particular, whether the world is going to end very soon, 21st of December this year. And so I want to spend a fair bit of time dealing with that topic, but I want to case it in that bigger question of how you know the future, how you know what's next. In Christian studies, that is known as the topic of eschatology, which is a great word for dinner parties. What's your eschatology? What's mine? Eschatology means the study of the final things, the study of what you think things are going to be like eventually. And so topics like heaven and hell and the end of the world and judgment and death, they all come into the study of eschatology. And the one I want to focus on a little bit here is the question of the end of the world, whether the world might end. And it's up to you what you do with this information. I mean, everyone out there will have some view on what's happening next, where the world is headed. You will have studied this or at least heard about it in the media in relation to environment science, climate science, people's views and predictions about where we are in terms of the future of the physical Earth and how much weather patterns have changed and how much human input has affected those things. You'll have various views in this room on that topic. Likewise, there'll be various responses to what I say here. I speak from a Christian viewpoint. And my particular viewpoint is Christianity informed by the Bible, the historical heart of the Christian faith. If Jesus is the Word of God in flesh, the Bible is the Word of God written down. And that's the position I take as the CEO of the Bible Society, and why we think the Bible is so important to people, that gives you access to understanding God through written form. So that's my perspective. You may not share that perspective. Some of you will. But I hope you'll find what I say interesting. It might draw you back to the Bible to look at it and think about what its teaching is about this topic of eschatology. So, 21st of December, 4 days before Christmas. You've probably done most of the Christmas shopping, got the ham, planned the relatives, worked out where you're going for your holidays. Will it all be in vain because the world's coming to an end? Well, this is the view that's come to light now through the ancient culture of the Mayans. The 21st of December 2012 happens to be a date in the Mayan calendar, which is a different calendar to the calendar that the Western world uses, or indeed the Eastern world. It's the calendar of the Americas. And it's about 5,000 years old, 5,125 years old to be exact. It's actually called the Mesoamerican Long Count Calendar, if you want the whole name of it. And it's a very complex way of organising history. I mean, calendars are a little bit of an attempt to work out what the future is. They organise history in certain blocks for you, so that you can understand where you fit and what's likely to happen next. So our calendar is arranged in days, weeks, months, and years, and then decades, and then centuries. That's the kind of nuggets we use to organise our lives, so they're not just a moment, one moment after the next. And so we mark things like the passing of a month, or the passing of a week is important to us. Many of us get a weekend. We mark things like a decade with a bigger party at New Year's Eve. Every year we think is worth marking with a party on New Year's Eve. And certainly a millennium, as we just celebrated recently, is a big marker stone, isn't it? But contrary to expectations, not much changed from the morning before the new millennium to the morning after the new millennium. Maybe all those computer engineers have done a great job of fixing the Y2K bug. But nothing much changed, but we think of it as a very significant moment. Psychologically, it's a big turning point. Well, the Mayans, likewise, have a structure to their calendar. And it's worth reflecting on that a little bit. I want to give you the background information to answer this question of whether the world will end on 21st of December. In Mayan mythology, there is a poem. Any South American, Central American people here who will know more about this than me? Excellent, I can speak for it. That's fantastic. you'll look at Wikipedia afterwards. There's a poem in Mayan mythology, and I've had reason to look at all these sort of cultural elements in my PhD studies, which were about eschatology in its cultural expressions. The poem is called Popolu, excuse my pronunciation, and it's about how the world was created. It's a creation myth that the Mayans build on. And in the Mayan story, the gods created humanity and the world of the human beings in order that someone might praise them. They were looking for some praise partners. And so they tried all these ways of creating human beings that didn't quite work. They tried to make them out of mud. That didn't quite work. They tried to make them out of wood. And that wasn't quite right. Eventually they worked out you could make human beings out of corn. Corn's very important to the South American economy. You could make human beings out of corn, and that would work. And the date they worked out that you could make them out of corn is, in our calendar, 13th of August, 3114 BC. That's the starting date of the Mayan calendar. From that date onwards, their history is organised in these blocks, but differently to us. Theirs is a kind of base 20 calendar. So you have a day, a kind of version of a day, then you have a 20-day segment. It's sort of a bit less than a month to us. Then there's a sort of 360-day segment, a bit less than a year to us. And then they have a 400, roughly 400, a bit less, years segment, which is also very important. So just like we would mark the turning of a decade, so they would mark the turning point at each of those periods with meaning and purpose and celebration. It's actually very easy to understand why these calendars differ. The Western calendar was formed by these. Base 10. The Mayan calendar, they added the toes. It's base 20. Aren't human beings wonderful? There's complex things that come out of our very basic ways of counting. Yeah. That's the difference. So what happens on 21st of December 2012? We reach the end of one of these long counts, as they call it. In fact, it's the 13th long count. And there are 13 cycles in Mayan mythology of creation before it's done. So 21st of December marks the end of that 13th cycle of creation, and so therefore becomes something of a significant marker, a bit like the year 2000, a bit like a moment in time where a significant point has been reached. Since we knew that, which is some many decades since that's been discussed and talked about in the world, all sorts of views have come forward about what might happen. Come on in. About what might happen on 21st of December. So is it a moment when the stars align? Is it a moment when racial harmony will come to the world? Is it a moment when there'll be a sudden cataclysmic weather event of some sort? And various people put forward their theories by studying the weather patterns or studying the star charts about what's going to happen on the 21st of December. I thought the best way to solve this was to go to the university study centres that look at Mesoamerican studies and see what they said. I looked at four of them, one in Florida, one in University of Texas in Austin, and two in the Central Americas, and found out that no Mayan places any significance on the 21st of December beyond a party date. There was no sense in the history of the Mayans that this was going to be the moment when it all finished. That's actually an invention in the 20th century of the future gazers, an invention of the type of person who wants to find these great moments that you can celebrate. In fact, in the culture, it was just another moment in the calendar. Because in the Mayan culture, history is not linear, but cyclical. And so there is no sense of end in the way they construct the philosophy of history. There is only the next phase. So the 13 cycles finish in creation, and we move again to the next cycle. The next big cycle rolls on. And history just continues with no sense of an ending. So from an academic standpoint, the Mayan apocalypse is a bit of a beat-up. It's a marketing opportunity. It's a chance to sell things before the date. You know, it's a fascinating thing because of human psychology. Because we have this sense of impending interest in the impending scenarios that are in front of us. We have this ongoing interest in what's next, what's the future going to hold, and is there a point we're going to reach that's decisive? The Mayan civilization has already had its own apocalypse, as we know. A very slow and dry one, I should say, in about the 11th century, when a period of enormous drought just wiped out those civilizations, so that it wasn't really until the 16th century when the Spanish came along and discovered all these ancient cities. Has anyone been to see any of the ancient South American cities? Had that chance? Yeah, I haven't either. But I'd love to. And found these very sophisticated ancient cities, but no one around to tell the story of what happened. Actually, relatively recent research at Pennsylvania State University has uncovered this enormous drought across the Americas at that period, which literally killed off a civilization. So they had their apocalypse, but it was slow and natural. So what we get here is this philosophy of time, the cyclical time, linear time. Cyclical time says history really has no end. Even if it did have a beginning, it has no end. It just continues. Relentless cycles on replay. What is will be again. What has been will once more be. And the circle is the best image of what existence is all about. That's the Mayan idea. It's also an idea in Eastern philosophy, some classical philosophies, and indeed the Lion King movie. It's a very sophisticated idea. That's where it comes from, that circle of life idea. But it's not the Christian view of history. The Christian view of history is much more linear than that. And so we want to spend a little bit of time thinking about the Christian view of history and what might happen at the end in the Christian understanding. The Christian view of history does have a beginning. There is a story of creation that you can read in Genesis, and we're not here to argue about the nature of Genesis today, but there's an account of creation that tells us the world had a beginning and that God created the world. That God was involved in the universe's beginning. There was God, then there was God and the world. That's the Christian view. But where's it going from there? What's the future? History has a beginning, but what happens next? Well, we know from the unfolding pattern of the Bible that God is interested in the world, which is different to a lot of other religions. The Christian God expresses interest and involvement in the history of the world. And so the Bible tells you about God's involvement with the nation of Israel in particular, with those peoples of the Middle East, with prophets, with the building of communities, with the calling of people to behave in a way so they would flourish. And we have that record in the scriptures, in the Christian view of God's involvement with the world. Until Jesus Christ comes into the world and God's involvement becomes personal, if I can put it that way. that God gets involved in the world in the person of Jesus Christ, so that God might be known, and also that the world itself might be in harmony with God. You know the Christian message, you know that Jesus Christ, as God in the flesh, was here to bring harmony between those human beings who had moved away from God and their world, and the perfect holy God. And we talk about the death of Jesus as the moment of harmony between humanity and God, when sin was forgiven and the world began to be restored, and the resurrection of Jesus as the conquering of death. That's the Christian story of how God relates to the world. But what about next? So the resurrection marks a change in our understanding of history. It's a point where death and sin no longer have a hold over humanity, but can be resolved. But what next? What's the future to hold? Will this world come to an end one day? Will it continue? Well, we could do a large Bible study on this, and if you're interested, I've written a book on this with a colleague of mine, which I believe can be studied in a book group called 666 and all that, and I'd love to tell you the whole of the book, but we've only got lunch hour. So instead, I'll give you three themes that come out of the Bible. First is, the Bible talks about the future and the end point of the world involving the destruction of nations. Many of the Old Testament prophecies involve talk of a snippet of one of these prophecies. And I don't know if you know the Old Testament literature much at all, but I'll just read you a little bit from the prophetic book called Jeremiah. So this is a big history of the prophet Jeremiah's words to Israel. And it says in chapter 51, verse 29, "The land trembles and writhes, for the Lord's purposes against Babylon stand, to lay waste the land of Babylon so that no one will live there." Now, these sorts of statements often worry people to know, because it sounds like cleansing or warfare or something like that. But actually, it's a prophecy. It's a prophecy that the nations that have opposed God will be brought to justice. That's the theme of the Bible in terms of the future. That nations, leaders, those with authority, those with privilege, will be brought to account before God for what they have done. That oppressors will be removed. So the theme is towards justice. This world will come to a time when people are brought to account and justice is done. That's the first theme. There's so much more to say on these, but we don't have much time. The second theme is the mention of a cosmic apocalypse. An end, or Armageddon, this kind of language. And normally when people talk about the end of the world in Christian terms, that's what they mean. They're talking about the apocalypse, or Armageddon, and so forth. Well, this is an interesting one, because the Bible actually says less on this than most people think. It does talk about the apocalypse. Let me have a few other verses for you. It does talk about an end to all things, but listen to the language. So this comes from another book of prophecy called Isaiah, chapter 24. "See, the Lord is going to lay waste the earth and devastate it. He will ruin its face and scatter its inhabitants. The earth will be completely laid waste and totally plundered. The Lord has spoken this word. The earth dries up and withers. The world languishes and withers. And the moon will be abashed and the sun ashamed. For the Lord Almighty will reign on Mount Zion and in Jerusalem and before its elders gloriously." This big image of cosmic apocalypse, that everything will be ruined. Why? Again, it's judgment. That judgment will come on the world that has turned away from God, and even the moon and the sun will be ashamed, and God will be put in his right place again, Mount Zion, Jerusalem, as symbols of the authority of God. And glory will be known. The glory of God will be known. So somewhere in the future, at some point, there'll be this sense of God's glory being known, the earth being judged. But is this a picture of wiping out of the earth? Or is it picture language of judgment? I think the tendency of Scripture is towards the latter. It's meant to be telling us that God will not let things go on the way they will. He will bring about judgment. All of these apocalypses in the Bible take their origins from the flood of Noah back in Genesis, when God did judge the world with a flood. Genesis 6 to 8, where every living thing was destroyed except those saved in the ark. Now, whatever you make of that account, that is a picture of God's judgment, cosmic judgment on his creation for turning away from him. But there's the survivors. There's Noah and his family. There's a sense of it will go on. It's not total destruction. In Genesis 9:11, he says to Noah at the end of that flood period, one of the Bible's most important promises, "I'll establish my covenant with you, my promise. Never again will all life be cut off by the waters of a flood. Never again will there be a flood to destroy the earth." If this promise is true, then God is not going to bring about a cosmic judgment of the earth. What he's judging is sin and turning away from God, not the earth itself. This is not a picture of the end of the world. This is a picture of justice and judgment coming to the world. Well, that's my second point, and just a brief comment on Armageddon. You can make more of that if you want to. Armageddon is probably the most apocalyptic idea in the Bible overall. It's that idea that there'll be a final battle of the world, a final cosmic battle of the forces of good and evil. And there's about four or five Bible passages that talk about this idea, although the word Armageddon is only mentioned once. I've been to Armageddon. It's a valley in Israel, in the top near Lake Galilee, called Megiddo. And it's a great vista where you can imagine a battle taking place. And my view of the Bible is that that is a picture of what final judgment is meant to be like. To be honest, I don't expect battles to take place there, but they did take place in the past. They're described in the Old Testament. If you like the reference, look at 2 Kings 23 verses 29 and 30. But so much ink has been used over Armageddon and its future for the world, I think we're misunderstanding the language of the Bible here. This is a picture of judgment rather than a description of what is going to happen next. Again, plenty more to say. So, three themes: the destruction of nations, the cosmic apocalypse. The third theme in the Bible, and this one picks up a lot more of the New Testament, is the idea that this world will pass. This world will pass. There is plenty of discussion in the New Testament about this world being under judgment, the things of this world that are wrong passing away. A moral renewal of the world, a moral judgment of the world. And this is the kind of language I think you need to take on board about what it means for the world to end, is that the wrongness of the world will come to an end in the Christian view, not the world itself. It's the wrongness of the world that God wants to correct, to judge, to bring about justice, not the world itself. So in summary, I think the Bible actually teaches that the world will not end. Probably not on 21st of December. But the world will not end because the world itself is about to undergo renewal in the Christian view of history. So an end point of the Christian nearly linear view of history is the point at which this happens, the point of change. And as we, Christian people, try to look into the future, they look to say, what does the Bible tell me about that period? I may not know when it's going to happen. I may not know all the details of how, but I'm given a whole range of picture language and significant teaching about what sort of things will happen around that time. There are four things. And this brings us back to our initial conditions that we're looking for as human beings when we try to understand the future: the past, the present, the ongoing, and the innovative. They're the four things we're trying to sort out. In terms of the past, Christians know that Jesus rose from the grave, that death is not the end of everything, but it's possible to conquer death, that this world will not be defeated by death, because here's an instance of someone defeating death. We look at the past, we believe Jesus Christ rose from the dead, and that gives us hope of a deathless future. Then we look at the present, and we see this world and all of its troubles and all the pain and the terrible things that happen to each and every one of us, some of us more than others. And the Bible says we know this world is on notice. It's under a curse. It's on notice that that injustice will not be tolerated forever. Oppression will not be tolerated forever. That judgment will come. And that's the situation we're in now. We know that the resurrection of Jesus is our hope. We know that judgment will come and this world is on notice. We have an ongoing understanding. The ongoing part of it is that God does not give up on the human race. If there's an unfolding kind of thread, an ongoing thread to the Bible, it's this promise of God, the promise to be with you, the promise to keep coming back, the promise to forgive, the promise to show mercy, that God will not give up on the world and its people. What a wonderful thing to know about the future. We may not know what that looks like, but to have confidence that God will be with us is pretty much all we need to know. That the good, just, holy, merciful God will be with us regardless of what happens next. And finally, the idea of innovation. You see, this world, according to the scientists, will come to an end. The science now is pretty clear suggesting that there will be a time, it may be billions of years ago, when we either crunch or expand so that we can't sustain things anymore. Or the sun envelops us. The science tells us that this kind of point is coming. So if you don't believe in God, you do believe in the end of the world. Because that's the trajectory you're on. That's what the science is telling us. But the Christian view is different to that. It's that God will innovate. He'll interrupt that process. And the promises of Jesus to come back in glory will be fulfilled, and the judgment will come, and justice will be done, and a new creation will begin. And the flow of nature, so to speak, will be interrupted by the flow of grace. And God himself will renovate things. That's something of what we know from the Bible. That's the Christian view of what the future holds. As I said at the beginning, you really would be a fool not to think about the future. But you need to use the tools and resources we have to do it well. I remember a number of years ago reading a book by a US judge, a guy called Richard Posner. And he wrote a book with a fantastic title, let me just get it right, Catastrophe, Risk and Response. And he wrote it after the tsunami. Another of those big events that no one thought would happen. And his idea was this. There are some events that are so unlikely, but so dramatic and so significant that we would do well to put unreasonable resources into managing them. So a tsunami warning system is an unreasonable resource around the world. Very difficult to implement. Enormous science involved, enormous expense ongoing. But the consequences of a tsunami are so incredible that it's worth doing. I think the Christian faith is a little like this. But some people would like to ignore it or think, I can't know anything about God, or it's too remote, or it's not going to happen. But it's such a consequential vision for your life now and your life in the future that you'd be crazy not to put an unreasonable amount of resources into sorting it out, into thinking it through, into trying to understand who Jesus was and what his death and resurrection mean for our future. Can I leave that with you as a thought, to put unreasonable resources into exploring this person of Jesus and understanding what he tells us about the future of the world? And do enjoy your Christmas. Thanks.
We do have a few minutes for some questions and interaction, Simon, with what Greg had presented. There has been a question come through on the SMS that says that this person understands that there has already been a battle at Armageddon or Megiddo in the 20th century in 1917, and the British won.
God's forces.
Do you have any comments on that?
I'm not sure that needs a serious answer.
Okay. I don't think so. Another question, I suppose, from myself. I understand, I'm not sure if you're, from your research into the Mayans, was that the apocalypse began, or the discussion of the apocalypse began because there was some fragment found in the 1960s or something which was prophesized a god of war descending at the end of the calendar and so on. Do you have
that I don't know about, but I'm not surprised.
Right.
And there were a whole bunch of things that were studied in the 20th century about Mayan culture that led to the examination of the calendar. Of course, there are, like most of these things, there's a variety of views about the calendar, and some people think it's actually 23rd of December that will be the end, right. And it depends on how you count, of course. So there's a whole series of things that have kind of led people to look at this,
mm-hmm.
But I don't know, I have to look into that.
Okay, sure. Yeah. Any further questions, or is Gary at the back?
Yes. Thanks for that comment. Yeah, just on new. Yeah, it's a really interesting term, and obviously there's sort of cluster of words in the Bible that mean something like new that we could look at, and they probably do have more of a range of meaning than just absolutely unheard of before. That phrase, "Behold, I make all things new," from the Bible, seems to suggest something like everything that was wrong before is right now. That there's a sort of moral dimension to the word new, and I think that's really interesting. That's the renewal that God is interested in, is the righting of wrongs. So it deserves a lot more study. Yeah, it does. And of course, Christianity has at its heart the sense of new being the fulfillment of old as well. So New Testament, Old Testament, the New Covenant, the Old Covenant. There's a sense that the new doesn't discount the past, but fulfills the past and rights the wrongs and makes it all good. So I think there's a range of things that would be great to study further about the meaning of new. Mm-hmm. Thanks for the comment.
Yeah, appreciate it for organizing that. My name is Leon, and thank you, Doctor, for beautiful and eye-catching your lecture. But very important thing, if you reduce the time, go to back by a speed of light, we talk about psychology type. That's one thing. Also, I agree with you. We are live in now. Important live in now. We don't know future. You ask a high philosopher, type of scientist, he don't know future. Buddhist, Muslim, Christian, anything, type of philosopher like that. We don't know future, we live now. But I agree with you also, we need take out the die in the mind. We need a physically maybe change. Important thing in your lecture, some scientists believe world or universe have beginning, have end, have beginning, no end, no beginning, no end. This is very important, but these are not in the practical, only in the theory.
Mm.
But the Bible right happened in the Babylon time, something happened in the time. I believe Bible not fiction. Something come up in the Bible, very important. We need to focus this, we need to understand that.
So
my
just,
question here,
question, thanks, yeah.
The beautiful thing in the sea with this selfishness, greedy, people come worship the money. We need to think about justice and morality. We not need to focus about the future. We do not future. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Lovely comments. Thank you. And of course, you're right. And as a scientist, you know, there's a variety of views about the beginning there. But also, if I understood you rightly, you're saying in theoretical terms, discussions about was the universe caused, for example, or not caused. They fascinate certain kinds of minds. Others of us think, what are they talking about? But that's a really valuable topic for people to explore, and it helps to answer some of the questions that people have about whether there's purpose in life, as to whether there is any cause beginning to the universe. So really, really significant. Thanks for the comment. Yeah.
Meaning and life, morality collapse, and justice.
Thank you.
Yes, that's right. Yes. Yeah. So we have run out of time for any more further questions and comments. If you do have any more questions for Greg, he's staying around for a few minutes.
I can stay for minutes, yeah.
A few minutes before running off to the airport this afternoon. So please, once again, thanks.
Thanks very much.
The recording that you have just listened to is from the City Bible Forum. For more information about City Bible Forum events in your city, or to order other talks, please visit citybibleforum.org.